This is a Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast, and even though we took time off for the holidays, we did want to review three of the biggest films of the holiday season, Knives Out, Frozen 2, and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. So please won't you be our neighbor? You see how it's creepy when it's anybody but him? This is Hollywood Outsider. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, my fellow ho, Amanda.
Hello, hello.
It's really a lot more uncomfortable when it's just one.
And it's when I'm a female.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't seem great on your end.
I think John would be fine with it, but, you know, hey, Hollywood Outsider, that's all it means. Back up. We said we were taking 2 weeks up. We would have a couple things to drop in probably during the break, and we have three movies we wanted to review. And John didn't see him. He's on vacation. So just Amanda and I are going to handle this. But we're going to talk about Knives Out, Frozen 2, and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. For this, we're not going to do a normal show. We're just going to do the reviews. We just want to talk about these movies and how teenagers are having machete fights over Frozen. And why is that a thing? But before we get to it, I do want to say, if you are doing any holiday shopping and you want to support the show and you don't go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, and you don't do that, you can support the show by not spending a dime on it. You can actually just go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, scroll down, there's a little Amazon box where you click that and you just do your Amazon shopping through that link, and we actually get a little kickback from that. It's not a ton, but it does help the show. So if you want to do that, please do that. Thehollywoodoutsider.com, find the Amazon box, done. Shop away.
It's pretty easy to do. You just got to remember.
Yeah, I mean, it does literally cost you zip. It doesn't add on to anything. It just, yeah. So,
yep.
Easy peasy. All right, well, let's get into the movies people want to know about. Let's talk about Frozen 2 first.
Enjoying your new permafrost, Olaf?
I'm just living the dream, Anna. Oh, how I wish this could last forever.
Mm.
And yet change mocks us with her beauty.
What's that?
Forgive me, maturity is making me poetic. Tell me, you're older and thus all-knowing. Do you ever worry about the notion that nothing is permanent?
No.
Really? Wow, I can't wait until I'm aged like you so I don't have to worry about important things.
Before we get into the movie, you did hear about the kids having this this burst, right, in the theater. Like, a bunch of 13-year-olds were having a fight over Frozen 2, apparently, and machetes were involved. I don't know. It's got to be fake. Is that real?
Where was the security? That's what I need to understand.
Well, how much security do you normally have in a theater?
Well, I mean, if there's a machete, somebody should be calling for security.
Somebody should have noticed that. Yeah. At some point, you're just looking at it. It looks weird. Is that a ice stick? No. That's a machete, Bob. Well, I'm not going over there. That dude's got a machete. That's dangerous. A bunch of 13-year-olds had a fight. Google it. It's pretty amazing.
That's so bizarre.
Weird.
Yeah. What's that guy who actually was in the movie Machete?
Danny Trejo.
Yeah, it feels like a Danny Trejo movie. Like, this is the premise for his next movie.
Like, Machete just shows up at a Frozen screening and just starts going after people. I would watch the hell out of that movie. It's better than In Space. Yep. All right, you saw Frozen 2. I did not. But I also want to point out, when we did our holiday movie preview just recently, you said you had never seen Frozen. So I hope you watched the first one before you.
I did. Yeah, I watched it just a few days before I saw seriously, that same night or the night after we recorded that episode, I went and watched it on Disney Plus.
And did you enjoy the first one?
I did. It was really good. I'm ashamed of myself that I was a naysayer because of a song that got overplayed, because it was a really sweet movie. The ending of it, am I allowed to talk about the ending? It's been like forever.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if we're talking about Frozen 2, I would assume.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what Frozen 1.
So I love in the first one that they decided to, instead of going the cliche route of it's romantic love that saves her, that it's the sibling love, that mm-hmm. it's another type of love, and that gets such fair representation, but it doesn't take away from the romantic relationship. There was just such a good balance there. And I thought that that story was really important for children to see, for adults to see. The music was good. The story was pretty good. So I didn't feel as much as others, though, that the songs were as strong in that first movie.
That's not fair, obviously, though. That's not fair, though, because you're coming into it like 4 years later. So you've been burned out already. So you're already walking into that with one strike against it.
No, I mean? I don't mean that they're not good songs, because they are good songs. And I liked Let It Go. Like, I've been very over that song because of how played out that portion of it got. But hearing the whole thing and seeing the moment made it so much more magical. But what I mean by that with the songs is that they were good songs, but a lot of them weren't memorable. Like, I didn't walk away singing them myself other than Let It Go, which is why that one got so much notoriety, mm-hmm. popularity. The rest of them just felt like they were filler songs. So that was the part, is what I'm referencing, is that they're good songs, but they just didn't have as much memorability to it because it was just such an intricate part of the conversation in the movie.
I'm not 100% certain it's a word, memorability.
I don't know, but I made it a word. It worked until you said something.
Trademark pending.
Yeah, right?
All right, well, let's get into Frozen 2. Anna, Elsa, Kristoff, Olaf, and Sven leave Arendelle. It's not Arendelle. I wish it was Arendelle. It should be Arendelle. Like A-A-R-O-N. It's spelled different. To travel to I really got caught on that, and I probably shouldn't have. To travel to an ancient autumn-bound forest of an enchanted land, they set out to find the origin of Elsa's powers in order to save their kingdom. Now, that's the IMDb description. Is it a spoiler to ask why they need to save their kingdom? You can say yes if it is.
Well, I don't know how much of the story people want to know, because I think if I start saying something, then it leads into the full discussion. So I would say just wait and see. Okay. But what I will say is that the story in this... Oh, are you going to ask me questions?
No, I should probably wait. I am, but go ahead.
I was just going to talk... I really liked the story in this one. I liked the story that they went with even a little bit more than the first one, and I just talked about how much I liked that first movie's story.
What about this one was better or different or unique, I guess?
It just kind of pulled on my heartstrings a little bit because it had a little bit of a Pocahontas-y feel, which is weird, but it was very much so about the different elements in nature and just trying to find the truth behind things rather than just going with face value and trying to really get to the root of problems between people. And I don't know, just the driver of the story and how they resolved it, I was really a big fan of that. And it just made me feel a little bit warm inside leaving, knowing what happened with the story.
And Anna, Elsa, are they still, they get along? I mean, because I know the first movie, they didn't get along. They came back together at the end. There's none of that manufactured, they break apart again, right? They are still together, sisters.
Yeah, they're still sisters, they're still together, they want to be doing this together, but I wouldn't say that they stay together the whole movie. They still do separate and do their own thing, but it's for the same cause.
Okay, so, I just mean like there's no, they don't separate and one of them, they're not fighting. A rift in their relationship.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, no, that's a good point, is that they're not reusing some of the same elements from the first movie. They're just building off of what was used and developed in the first to try to continue the story on, and they don't burn you out with that same thing of, oh, they're fighting, now they're back together. Oh, they're fighting, they're back together, which we see in romance movies a lot. This one doesn't have that, which is great.
I've heard the story is darker than the first one. Would you agree? Still safe for kids, but would you agree?
Yes. And I think a lot of that goes mostly to the humor of Olaf. He is, because he's a maturing character. I mean, a lot of these characters are maturing. They're developing.
the snowman? Like,
yes, yes. And which is so weird, but he becomes very morbid and infatuated with the discussion of mortality And I mean, he literally has these discussions in the film. And so he gets very philosophical on the meaning of life and the true evolution of maturity and the inevitable death in life. And it becomes kind of dark in those elements. Some of his jokes are very blunt and very dark in some ways, but it's that dark humor that kids will chuckle at and not fully comprehend, but it may start a conversation with their family.
Mm.
But that the parents are like, holy shit. I can't believe they actually said that.
That's pretty amazing. Especially since the snowman's really only real threat is a ray of sunshine. I mean, his whole life is determined by, the sun came out. Son of a bitch.
Well, he doesn't even have that anymore because in the first movie, Elsa's powers, he's connected to Elsa's powers now because she gave him this little snow cloud and like permanent power. Or
permanent, that's right. Yeah. I haven't seen it since it came out way back when because, you know,
yeah,
I was on the early train.
So he's actually directly tied to Elsa and her life. And I think that may be why he has that discussion is like, if anything ever happened to Elsa, and he's thinking about that, like he would be gone. And life does not always continue. And that's just part of the circle is that people die. So it is very dark that it's coming up, but his humor is the best.
Sounds like he's your favorite character then?
100%. And I feel like most people are probably going to anticipate that I'm all Kristen Bell, which she's great and everything. But seriously, Olaf makes the... I was smiling and laughing. At one point, one of the things he does was so hysterical to me that I was crying, laughing so hard. I just could not believe that they legitimately Disney managed to put that in there.
So you sound impressed that Disney released this movie, that it's actually not just watered down for kids.
Yeah, it isn't. It's something that I feel like the first one was definitely... It was tolerable for adults and it was fun and it was beautiful and it had a good message. But that can get old very quickly and the whole princess thing can get burned out as a parent having to rewatch that. But this one has a lot of message to it and this one has a lot of humor, which is really meant, I think, in some ways for adults. It just, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like. How about music? You talked about the music earlier. How was the music in this one? Did you feel the same about the music here as you did the first
one?
And I
know, And I know I'm in the minority when I talk about the music between the two movies. I like the music in both of them, but I found this movie's music to be a little bit more memorable. And I don't mean that necessarily that the music is better. I don't think that that's really a fair representation because the music is great in both of them. But some of the songs are a little bit more catchy. They're a little bit more simple to remember because what they do with the music in the Frozen movies is they really tie it to their thoughts and their speaking. So it's not just a catchy jingle that they're singing about. It's this really in-depth text. So you're just like, I don't remember all of these words. And this one has a little bit more, I'm going to use this word again, memorability, to where you can recite the songs a little bit easier. They flow a little bit better for you. So I thought that was really nice because then there's even this debate going on the interwebs now of which song is the new Let It Go, which I think is great.
Hey, if something's going to take its place, sure.
Well, not even just that it's going to take its place, but what is the main song of this movie? And because there's competition within it. The first one didn't have that competition.
No,
it was like Let It Go was the song.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you any of them except Let It Go, honestly.
Do you want to build a snowman?
Huh.
That's the only part I remember from another song in the first movie. But this one has two songs that really rival each other for that main spot. So that's actually like a discussion people are having and that I had after the movie ended where I was like, this is the song, like this is the new theme song of this movie. And the person I went with was like, no, it's this song. So, you know, it's just kind of, I think that speaks about the music itself.
All right. That sounds like Frozen 2 is good, but how good? If $10 is full price of admission, what do you give Frozen 2?
$7.50.
$7. All right. Sounds like a winner.
Chicken dinner.
No, we don't do that. here ever.
This piece will be for an issue about heroes. Do you consider yourself a hero?
I don't think of myself as a hero. No, not at all.
What about Mr. Rogers? Is he a hero?
I don't understand the question.
Well, there's you, Fred, and then there's the character you play, Mr. Rogers.
You said it was a play at the plate. Is that what happened to you?
I'm here to interview you, Mr. Rogers.
Well, that is what we're doing, isn't it?
All right, it's movie two, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, based on the true story of a real-life friendship between Fred Rogers and journalist Tom Junod. Tom Hanks tackles Rogers, and Matthew Rhys takes on a version of Tom Junod as he plays Lloyd Vogel. Both Amanda and I both saw this movie. I thought it was going to be more of a Mr. Rogers movie, where we're going to follow Mr. Rogers around and see this time in his life, because Tom Junod and Lloyd Vogel in the movie write this Esquire article about heroes, and Mr. Rogers is perceived as a hero. And you think it's going to be about Mr. Rogers and their relation and his relationship with Lloyd in the movie. What it ends up being really is about Lloyd. It's really about Lloyd, and Mr. Rogers is a supporting character. This is more focused on Lloyd himself and his issues with his father and his issues struggling with forgiveness and kindness and understanding and dealing with his anger and things that we all struggle with on a daily basis. Did that surprise you that they went that way?
It did a little bit, because I just wasn't fully aware that that's what they were going to do. But what I want to say about this movie is that while Mr. Rogers may be seen as a supporting character, he's also the backbone of this story. Because what this, to me, what it felt like the message of this film is while we're not following Mr. Rogers' movements and his daily life and everything, we're seeing the impact of Mr. Rogers, which is what most of the discussion for Mr. Rogers is really about. It's how he changed the course of so many different lives and how his genuine nature has impacted so many different individuals in ways that they never could have expected. And so to me, that's what this film was a representation of, is not necessarily all of the things that were happening to Lloyd in his life, but how Mr. Rogers impacted the course of Lloyd's life just based off of simple discussions.
And the world in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a beautiful moment, and I recommend everybody find the article and read it. It's a great piece. And there's a great moment in the movie. It's not spoiling anything. It's he and Lloyd are on a train, and there's a moment where the other passengers recognize Mr. Rogers, and they all engage in kind of like a sing song, where they sing along with the theme song. And it seems like this is a cheesy, almost Disney kind of thing to do, right? That's a part of the piece. That actually happened. It speaks to, and there's a lot of little moments like that. There's a lot of really, really beautiful moments where you see the impact he made on everybody's life as he went about his business. And Lloyd is seeing that. So he's kind of like our viewpoint into this world, where he goes in kind of like us today, where we're cynical and we're negative in some ways. You know, we're looking for the con. You know, we're so jaded as a society. We're always looking for the edge. Like, what really is going on? And that's kind of how Lloyd approaches this. As he goes through and he sees Mr. Rogers and he sees the impact, and his wife is affected, how, you know, she considers Mr. Rogers a very important part of her childhood. And then you see the impact he has on children and how he can truly engage with a child and he connects with a child and all of these little things. It's like all of these small, beautiful moments where Mr. Rogers isn't really doing anything except existing and being who he is. And it's wonderfully constructed in that respect. It's really not the movie I thought it was going to be, but it ended up being better for it, I think.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that.
Now, we've talked about this film was going to be about the nature of kindness. You know, we kind of joked about that in the holiday movie preview. What did you feel about the film walking out of the theater? Do you feel like it had a message, or it was just conveying Mr. Rogers' tone?
Well, I feel like it's to represent that all of us can make an impact with our words. Just saying something that's nice, being there, having conversation with people, that can change things in such a dramatic way that we don't fully realize the ramifications of our actions and of our words until we see it from the other person's perspective. And so we're really seeing that here, where Mr. Rogers doesn't need to know every detail of what happened in Lloyd's life. We get to see how his words shaped or changed the course of Lloyd's life and the things he was dealing with. And so for me, that was part of the message, was that we all have the ability, either positively or negatively, to influence somebody's life just by the words that we choose to say, the conversations we elect to have, and the way that we handle things in our day-to-day life. And also that we see Mr. Rogers as this celebrity, as this hero in a lot of different ways, because he is a hero to so many people and has been for so long, but he never saw himself that way, because if he did see himself that way, and I think his wife's character spoke to this also, then it would be unattainable. We would never be able to find somebody who could be as genuinely good as Mr. Rogers, as Fred Rogers was. And so part of the message is that there can be a Fred Rogers in all of us. And so to take that away with us, that we all have the potential and the ability and the innate goodness in us to be that person, we just really have to work hard at it, because Fred had to work hard at it every single day of his life.
Yeah, his wife talks about that in the article and in the movie, that, you know, it's not like he never has a temper or never has a bad day. He just deals with it. In fact, in the movie, they actually convey a couple moments of that, where how he deals with his bad day. And he just, it's an everyday process. He just took it seriously, where most of us, I would say, probably don't, or at least not to his level.
Right, absolutely.
I didn't feel like it was a message movie, but I feel like a message came across. And that's a positive thing. When mm-hmm. you're walking out, there were several moments I teared up throughout the movie. I don't know if you did. I teared
absolutely.
Up several times during the movie. And I always get choked up, like father-son relationships, because I had daddy issues. So it always gets me. But there's a wonderful moment where he's talking to Lloyd, and it's just common sense thinking, but most people don't put it in that perspective, where he's, you know, he blames his father for so many things, and it's so much anger. And, you know, Mr. Rogers points out what a wonderful human being Lloyd is. And he just says, you know, hey, you wouldn't be who you are had your father not been there, had not done whatever he did. You know, essentially, he's pointing out that you are who you are because of those things as well. So as much as you like who you are now, you have to give credence to, part of that was due to that father's relationship, for mm-hmm. for better or for worse. And it's just, it's a wonderful way to point out, hey, you are who you are, deal with it. If you're happy with who you are, accept the things that happened as part of it. And if you're not happy, then work on it every day, work on it. And I just think that's a beautiful message without getting messagey.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was kind of the beauty of Mr. Rogers in general, was that he was never really preachy, but he made people really contemplate in such a natural way the things that he was trying to get across.
Exactly. Now, I would say we would agree that Matthew did a wonderful job as Lloyd, Matthew Rhys, but I would say that the one thing people want to know about is Tom Hanks. Did Tom Hanks for you, because he is like probably top five most iconic actor all time, I would say.
Yeah.
And he's playing one of the most iconic people of all time as well. Did you buy him as Mr. Rogers, or did you see Tom Hanks the whole time?
I still saw Tom Hanks, but I think I saw so much. I feel like I can see some of Mr. Rogers in Tom Hanks, just in the way he normally is. And there was parts of it where I felt like he fell more into Tom Hanks than he did Mr. Rogers. But for the most part, when he was Mr. Rogers, he had such a beautiful way where I'm used to Mr. Rogers having kind of almost a very slow and just natural and soothing way of talking.
Very mannered, deliberate style. Yeah.
And I always felt like Mr. Rogers really thought about what he was going to say before he said it. He wasn't just the type to jump the gun and say, I'm going to say whatever's in my head immediately. And that's something that's very natural for the most of us, for most of us to just say what we're thinking, to say what we're feeling, just to get it out there. And while Mr. Rogers advocates for that, he's always seemed to really contemplate making sure that he is using the appropriate words for the appropriate situation. And so there's that moment where he has that thought, and Tom Hanks does that. He has those moments where it's just silence, but it's not uncomfortable silence. And anytime he is silent, it makes you feel like comforted. And when he was on the screen as Mr. Rogers, like I genuinely took a deep inhale, exhale, because I just felt comforted again. I felt like there was that kindness, that little kind ball surrounding me where his aura was just back here. So mm-hmm. I would say 100% that Tom Hanks really, really identified as Mr. Rogers in his character performance. And it is something that I think is truly iconic.
It's so hard to, I will give him credit because it's so hard to do. I mean, if he was an unknown actor, it's a lot easier to do. You can disappear in a role. He can't disappear. He's Tom freaking Hanks. But he does for the most part. I mean, like you said, there are moments where I'm like, that's totally Tom Hanks. But the other moment, he has so many of his mannerisms down, and how he speaks to children specifically was so, because I love Mr. Rogers. I watched the documentary. I love the documentary. And you see how he interacts with children. He had a knack, a beautiful, wonderful knack for paying attention and focusing and listening to a child. Most people, when they talk to children, they just talk to them. He would listen. He really, really wanted to know about them and their hopes, their dreams, their whatever it was. He wanted to know. And Tom Hanks really tapped into that, which is hard to do, especially when the whole time I'm just like, well, it's just Tom Hanks playing Fred Rogers. No, at some point he does become Mr. Rogers. And you're right. His genuine niceness in Hollywood probably helps that. But it also, I think, his star power hinders it, and he was able to overcome that. That's pretty impressive.
Absolutely, yeah. I felt, I don't know about you, but it just, when I would watch The Real Mr. Rogers, I always felt like my heart was whole. I just felt like everything was really good. I felt like I was safe. I felt like I was comforted. It was just like, and it could be because of the time in my life when I watched it, and he just made life very peaceful for so many people. But I had that same feeling watching Tom Hanks become Mr. Rogers. And it didn't happen the instant I saw him, because I had seen some of that in the trailer already.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to make sure that I was giving it a fair chance and not just, yes, this is him. I really thought about it through his different scenes. And I just, every time he was on there, I felt like in my soul, I was like, I feel like Mr. Rogers is here. Yeah. So.
And once again, I can't say enough. Matthew Rhys did a wonderful job, since he really ended up being the focal point of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lloyd was a character we could get behind. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood?
$8.50.
Damn. I give it $7.50.
Yeah. It's not better than the documentary to me, because the documentary has the real thing. But it was as close as we're going to get.
This is New Coke, but it's a better version of New Coke. It's not real Coke, but it's New Coke. It's good, but, you know, it's not the real thing. All right. Last movie. And I'm going to say probably the best movie. Knives Out.
Mr. Blanc, I know who you are. I read your profile in The New Yorker. I found it delightful. I just buried my 85-year-old father who committed suicide. Why are you here?
I'm here at the behest of a client.
Who?
I cannot say, but let me assure you this. My presence will be ornamental. You will find me a respectful, quiet, passive observer of the truth.
Well, you actually got the early screening of Knives Out, which releases on November 27th.
Yes, and I need to preface, so you're right. Okay. I want to point out, in the last episode we argued about this, The Irishman. You're right about The Irishman.
Yeah, it was The Irishman, but I was also right about that.
Whatever. Shh. I retract it. I don't want anyone out there anymore. Damn it. All right.
It's on here.
Yes. I saw Knives Out. That's what I saw. Yes. And I, by the way, my second most anticipated movie of the year. So it had a lot to live up to.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
So just to give somebody the backstory of what this movie is, it was written and directed by Rian Johnson. And Knives Out is basically about a detective that investigates the death of a patriarch of an eccentric combative family. So that's the IMDb description, and I feel like Aaron's going to give us a little bit of backstory to it. But first and foremost, without revealing anything, what I need to know, because you hardly ever get stumped by a mystery, and this is a mystery, a murder mystery. So how did the mystery work for you? Were you surprised at all, or did you see it coming?
Okay, so it's tricky. I want to, and I was telling you this before we did this. This is one of the most well-written, well-structured mysteries I've seen in a long time. It's just very, very intelligently written. It's not quite what you think it is at the beginning, and there is a sprinkling of important plot points throughout at least the first half. So I will say, in terms of guessing who done it, I can tell you anyone who claims that they know who did it before the halfway mark is flat out lying, because there's no way you could, because important information doesn't even hit the film until the midway point. Okay? Just covering that. There is a lot of smaller details that come through, and I did guess one or two of those, but it was always a, in the back of my head, I don't know about that one. I think that. So I guessed one or two aspects of that really, really clearly. And much of the rest of it came as it went. Like, I did figure out who did it before we got to the end and why they did it and everything. Like, I did have it kind of pieced together. There were some details, though, that I didn't have in my head, which came in the final act, you know, when everything wrapped up. And the best thing I can say about it is, like, everything that gets laid out throughout the movie plays a part. Like, nothing is just dropped in there for a red herring. Everything plays a part in how the movie unfolds, which is wonderful, because once you figure it all out, it really all works. And I do this thing. Do you do this thing when you see a mystery where after you see it, you go back in your head and kind of go backwards to make sure everything works?
I try to. I try to remember if I, like, all of the elements, did I think that that piece worked into the mystery, or did I forget something? And, oh, that's how that piece ties into it. You know, I try to go back through it that way, or just rewatch the movie and see if I pick up the signs.
Right. See, so I have this thing where, because murder mysteries are my favorite genre, right? Sherlock Holmes, my favorite character. I love the idea of trying to figure out how things come together and what they mean. What I will say is, when I see a movie that's a murder mystery or a mystery of any kind, and you get to the end, after it's over, I don't score it immediately in my head, like if $10 is full price admission. I don't do that in my head, because I need to figure out, does the mystery work for me? Or are there aspects of it where I think it's a little far-fetched? Murder on the New Orient Express is a perfect example. I gave that movie a 7. I really, really love that movie. Like, I just think it's a great movie. It's beautifully shot. So the actors are wonderful, but I've always had a hard time, and I read the book, so I knew who did it before I got there. I have a hard time with, I don't want to spoil it because some people might not have seen it yet. There are more than one character complicit in what the crime is, and I have a hard time making that work in my head, because I think it's a little absurd in many respects. So that takes away from my enjoyment to some degree. Mm. This movie doesn't have that. It's very much an Agatha Christie setup, which means multiple characters all tied together. Who could have done it? But it's played out like Sherlock Holmes. It's like Sherlock Holmes and Clue. There's a lot of jokes. But it's very much like Sherlock Holmes, because you have Daniel Craig as the detective, also working with his own Watson, which they make references to, trying to put together exactly what is going on. And you do have some indications of to what happened, but you know there has to be more to the story.
So you kind of already name dropped one of the cast members as the detective.
Oh my God. And Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig is so awesome.
Well, the cast is stacked in this film. Like, he's not the only memorable name here. So did you feel like there was any one person that really overshadowed another and stood out, or did they all really stick their landing?
Everyone stands out. No one stands above anybody else. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Everybody that is cast in this movie is wonderfully cast. They fit the role. Nobody is pulling on anybody else's weight. And the one I was most concerned about was Daniel Craig, because he's playing Benoit Blanc, who is this Western, not Western, he's this Texas detective who is brought in to help with the case. And he has this Texas drawl. And if you've ever heard Daniel Craig, which I'm sure all of you have, you're just like, really? He's going to pull that off? And it is very, it's almost Foghorn Leghorn, you know, at certain points. Mm. But it works. He does it so wonderfully. It works. And his cohort, Marta Cabrera, is played by Ana de Armas. She was in Knock Knock. She's going to be the next Bond girl. She actually was the heart of the movie. You kind of follow her as she navigates this crazy family, the Thrombys, because Harlan Thrombey, Christopher Plummer, is the man who was perceived to have been murdered. You follow her navigating this family. She's basically a daughter of an immigrant, and she's here trying to, she took care of him, and now she wants to help figure this thing out, and she's working with Benoit and all this other stuff. Everybody's great. Chris Evans shows up. He's great. Jamie Lee Curtis, great. Michael Shannon, great. Don John, I don't even normally like Michael Shannon. I just think he's the same guy in every movie, very over the top. Great. Don Johnson, great. Toni Collette, of course, is always great. Just everybody is just like on the money. I've seen a lot of great casts. Very rarely do you see them all so much on the money.
Hmm.
Loved it. Loved everything.
Is there anything with this movie that you didn't like?
No, I've been trying to think of something. I've been like, man, I got to write a review on this bad boy. I got to be critical. Well, I can't think of anything I didn't like. I really, really can't. The mystery works. The laughs work. It's surprisingly funny. It's clever. It's so well written and scripted and acted and directed and just yada, yada, yada. It's Clue. It's Sherlock Holmes. It's Agatha Christie. It's everything I love. I'm actually teetering between, is it perfect? Because, I mean, I rarely ever give out a perfect score, but I feel like it's close to perfect. I just don't know.
So I'm going to steal something that we use in our bad movie nights on the Patreon episodes, okay, where at the end we take and make our own 5-star review. Well, this sounds like it actually is a 5-star movie for you.
Yeah.
So I want you to give me your best 5-star review in just a few sentences of why you loved this movie.
Well, Rian Johnson, the director, poor guy, got a lot of grief for The Last Jedi, which wasn't a bad movie at all, but, you know, he's been roasted. He's a great writer. He wrote this, he wrote Looper, So Rian Johnson builds the estate that the movie takes place in as this modern day Clue board. And the story is, like I said, an Agatha Christie set up with a Sherlock Holmes run through, all with a touch of Brick. If you saw that, it's also his movie, also a well done mystery. The acting is phenomenal. The mystery is phenomenal. The jokes work. The tension works. You're all in. There's nothing bad. Like, this is the kind of movie people say they want. We want original. We want different. We want something new. You got it. Go get it. Go to the theater and freaking see it. If this movie doesn't make like $100 million, I'm going to be pissed at everybody that doesn't go. Because this is the kind of thing people keep saying they want in a theater, and then it shows up, and then they don't get their ass out of the house and go see it. So that's what I'm saying about Knives Out. It's a get your ass out of the house and go to the theater and see it movie with friends.
All right, so this is the moment that you've been contemplating and that we've all been waiting for as one of your most anticipated movies of the entire year. What is your score? The price, if the price of admission were $10, what are you giving Knives Out? Be honest here.
Hang on, I got to talk this through. Let's see. I have it in my head, but the more I talk about it, the more it's in my head, because I will say it's officially my favorite movie of the year so far. The year's not over, try to be fair.
Beating Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which you were also anticipating?
Well, I definitely like it more than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I would say Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wasn't as good as it could have been. It definitely could have been tightened up by 20 minutes, you know? And at this point, Avengers Endgame was probably my favorite movie of the year, just because so many Avengers Assemble, whole thing. Another Chris Evans movie. Basically, anything with Chris Evans is guaranteed gold. That's what I'm going with. And he's great in this one. Everybody's great in this one. $10 the price of admission, though. Let me ask you a question, okay? We're both critics. Uh-huh. Right? We both have many reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
Supposedly.
So, well, we count. We count. If you can't objectively think of a problem with a movie, does that automatically make it a perfect movie? Or does that make it not necessarily perfect, just nothing really wrong with it?
I think it all depends on how you criticize your movies. Every critic has their own method and their own way of evaluating a film's effectiveness and its value. Typically with the Hollywood Outsider, we're going to look at the screenplay, we're going to look at the performances, we're going to look at the production, all of those standard trifecta things that go into it. I try to consider my rewatchability with a film as well. I don't know what other elements you include. You mentioned with murder mysteries that you include another element of how all of the mystery story elements connect in the dots. So to me, if all of the things that you're evaluating work on the highest level you could imagine, if you don't have an alternative that would produce a better film, if there's nothing that you can criticize, to me, that would make it a perfect film.
I like what you're selling.
Yeah. I think you just want somebody to convince you that you're actually able to put a 10 score on there.
No, I mean, I have actually, I think the only movies I've ever given a 10 to were The Dark Knight, 12 Years a Slave, the first Avengers, because it was the first time we had all of them together, and I thought that was just masterfully done, just bringing all the characters together. Titanic, you know, those are the only ones that I really have. And you can knock it all you want. When that movie came out, everybody thought it was the most wonderful thing in the world, so I don't want to hear any negativity. You know what? If $10 is full price of admission, I'm going to do it. $10. This is a perfect movie, I think. I do believe.
This is done.
Yeah, I'm putting it. Screw it. I was going to bring it back just a hair and be like, $9.50. No, I think it's a perfect movie. I've thought and racked my brain, and I'm sure people out there, you're going to find something wrong with it. Somebody's going to. Good for you. I can't. This is like every part of my sweetest spot in a movie, and it has a cast I love, a script I love, direction I love, and it's just fun from start to finish, never gets boring. Even the pacing, there's no trimming that needs to be done. God, yeah, it's a perfect movie.
Well, hot damn. Ah!
That feels good. That feels right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Man, I think you just got everyone pumped.
I hope so. I really am not exaggerating that. If you are wanting the theater adventure to continue and you want better, more original movies, go see this movie. Original. It's an original film. It's not based off a book. It's not a remake. It's not a blah, 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 blah. It's brand new. It's all new. And there is a chance, if it does really well, that Rian Johnson might return with Benoit Blanc and do another one where you've got Daniel Craig doing this southern drawl and twangy thing in another mystery somewhere down the road. And I would love to see that. This is a great, great film. I walked out of there smiling. And my anticipation level, you heard from the holiday movie preview, off the charts. You knew that, right? So were you surprised that I was still raving about it when I came out?
Yeah, usually when your expectations get set high, they don't get met. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a perfect example of that. You had really, really high anticipation and expectation for that coming from one of your favorite directors, actually your favorite working director.
Absolutely.
So you were even a little disappointed there because that's just how it works. That's why you usually keep your anticipation levels lower. So yeah, I was really expecting you to find any element that just didn't work in some way wasn't perfect.
There are not 20-25 minutes of just driving around Hollywood here. You know, there's actually story in every beat, and every beat actually amounts to something else, something down the road. And I know people are probably like, all right, you said that like 10 times. I just can't stop saying it, man. It was great. Go freaking see it.
Also, is this a movie that you could do as like a family outing for Thanksgiving?
There are two F-bombs. Which,
oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought you could only see one. Yeah, in a PG-13 movie, but I'm fairly certain I heard two. I could be mistaken, but
maybe they cut it off before the end on the second one.
That's
or
possible.
They changed the rating scale, like you can say two now.
I mean, I would say it's a family film if you've got like a teenager. I mean, if you've got little kids, no, because there's murder in the F-bomb a couple times. And definitely Chris Evans goes on a shit fit for a good minute and a half, which is pretty pretty hysterical. And you're a piece of shit. And you're a piece of shit. And you're a piece of
shit. That's funny. Yeah, all right. Well, that's a pretty good, as long as you don't have any little ones, or just send the little ones to Frozen 2 with a chaperone, and then the rest of the family goes see Knives Out.
You know what? I'm sure it's fine. Go buy it. You know, aside from machetes, it seems like a pretty safe environment to take your kids to. All right, well, that's going to do it. We were just doing some reviews because I know a lot of people are trying to figure out what to see the holiday season, and I think all three of these are winners. So it really just depends on what you're looking for this holiday season. But my recommendation of all three is Knives Out. What about you?
Well, I haven't seen Knives Out yet. I have some anticipation and expectation for that as well. But just between the two I saw, you know, it's tough. It's both movies are really good. It just depends what you're in the mood for. I would rewatch Frozen 2, quite honestly, just because it was fun and you can have more enjoyability with other ages. But same time, you got Mr. Rogers, man. Like,
you can't lose this holiday season. You can't.
No, it's a really good, ended up being a really good Thanksgiving week.
Oh, for man. Movies. And I saw 21 Bridges. I didn't talk about the Chadwick Boseman, where there's two guys who are on a killing spree. They basically stumble across a bunch of coke and they kill a bunch of cops. And then Chadwick Boseman's brought in to basically kill the thugs because they don't want them brought back in alive. And of course, there might be a conspiracy. There might be more to it. It's actually predictable as hell, but it's entertaining all the way through. So even that one, I mean, even you've seen everything in it, but it's slickly done. Chadwick Boseman's really good. There's a lot of great character work because the thugs in that movie, you actually come to really, I don't want to say sympathize because they gunned down police officers, but you come to at least understand their plight. And that makes them characters where you can gain some emotional traction with, where typically in these movies, they're just bad guys. So I can even say 21 Bridges is worth watching. So, that's four movies right there. Bam. Done. Dunsies. You got plenty to see, but Knives Out is really where you should go. I've oversold that movie so much. There's no way people don't come out. That wasn't perfect. This was wrong. That shot was wrong.
Oh, well. Man, it's all about everybody has a perspective.
Absolutely.
And if it works for you, you don't throw tens out there all the time.
I think four. This is like the fifth one. So yeah, I don't do it very often. Whew. And I'm going to see it again. Me and my mama are going to go see this bad boy.
Oh, that's sweet.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode. This was supposed to be just a quick 15 or 20 minutes. We're like 45 minutes later. This is the problem every week. It's why our episodes are so damn long. Man, anything you want to say in closing for the holidays?
Man, no, let's get out of here. We've got some food to eat this week.
Okay, thehollywoodoutsider.com is the website. You can always subscribe. Be sure to review this on Apple Podcasts, all that other jive. You want a bunch of extra stuff? Go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And we have numerous bonus episodes you can get there. But for now, we're out of here. So the next time you go to a theater,
go see Knives Out.
Buy a popcorn.
We out.
I feel like I should get a check from them at some point.
Knives Out?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rian Johnson better be signing that himself. You single-handedly just sold at least 1 million tickets.
Right. Checkbook's out, bitch. Pay up.